All right, backers, this is the Tactics Pod, so we thought we'd add an extra show each week, and we're going to do this with Danish Iqbal, who you may have seen on Twitter. Those great breakdowns of tactics and focuses on United. Danish, how's it going? Tell us about yourself.
It's going very good. It's going very good. I've not come off the high of Sunday. So in terms of that sense, it's going very well. Even though I'm fasting today, but I don't particularly care about that because that's how buzzed I am about the game. I am currently a tactics analyst writer for various platforms at the minute. So FOTMob, I don't know if people have heard of FOTMob, Sky Sports. Yeah. I do a lot of work on my own Substack as well. It'll be on my Twitter. And I'm weekly and on a daily basis watching games, rewatching games, analyzing them, figuring out what happened, figuring out why, and then figuring out the most palatable way to communicate to people. And then I also spend a portion of my time dealing with abusers who don't like tactics and who say I know nothing.
Well, we also, that's Daniel laughing in the back.
I don't like tactics. Seems like such a strange thing to say. Like, I'm not interested in them. I don't like tactics.
I have to say I've abused tacticos on the internet occasionally myself. But
you probably abused me back in the past. And
yeah. Sorry. Mea culpa.
It's okay.
Very good. Well, it's great to have you on. So, part of the idea here is that we'll take a day beat or so, and then we'll go back and we'll think about the tactics involved. And this show may evolve as we test it out as a format. So, hopefully, everyone likes it. Send us your feedback, and we'll be able to take it in a direction that works. All right. So, this was absolute chaos, Danish. But I was hoping you might be able to put some logic to it, because I was watching this admittedly in a pub, not always the best place to analyze in detail when there's a lot of emotion going on and not a lot of thought. But like, how did you see this game as it evolved?
Well, I mean it took me a long time to do a rewatch of this. It's 120 minutes, and then normally I go back and look at what happened and sort of annotate it and then sort of explain it. But I'm yet to go back to the second half of extra time again. But this is definitely one of them games where the analysis, whilst we'll do it and we'll go through it, the chaos level and the sheer bonkers and the sheer madness of this game is what should scream out to anybody. And I think the most admirable thing about Ten Hag, and whenever he does this, it tends to work, when he leans and bends into the chaos, and when he goes, okay, you know what, screw it, I'm just going to go for it, that tends to be when United all of a sudden look like much of a better team, or at least a team that can swing back. It's a team that takes a lot of punches. But with this young attack of Garnacho, Rashford and Hoyland, at least it can get back up and swing back at teams, and they swung back at Liverpool.
Yeah.
During the first half, what I felt was good about United has been good about I think there was about five games since the January break where they won, but it was still very chaotic, right? It was Luton, it was Wolves, I believe Everton were in there, I believe West Ham were in there. United have still conceded a ton of shots at Channel...
Forest in the Cup.
United have still conceded a ton of chances in those games and a ton of shots. The difference has been Garnacho, Rashford, Hoyland, and Bruno in the pocket. And in the first half, or the first sort of half an hour, that was exactly what we saw. And we also saw Manchester United pressing. Now, Man United pressing is a really interesting topic for me, because the problems that have occurred this season is the attack will press, the fullbacks won't. So what tends to happen is, If United press with four players, it's very easy for the opposition to kick it over the forward line press. And hey, press up. That's why we see all these hilarious pictures of, why is there so much space in the middle of the pitch when you play Man United?
And that's the donut. Yeah.
Exactly, yeah. What they did...
So is that because we're saying that... But it's partly because of the pressing, but is it also because the defenders are sitting off? Because if I think about... We talked about those games since January, and the one where I thought this is the closest to what Ten Hag wants is probably the first half against Wolves,
yes. Maybe.
And the difference mainly, I guess, between what we've seen since before was Martinez played and Shaw played, and they're not playing anymore. But it felt that the problem wasn't just the pressing; it was the gap between if you've got the front three pressing and Bruno and maybe some others, and you've got the back four sitting off, then that's one of the reasons why there's so much space in the middle of the pitch and the players look like they've just come out of the workhouse after 20 minutes.
Absolutely, yeah. Absolutely, that's been the case. I would say, though, against Wolves, the difference against Wolves was that is a game where United are going to have more of the ball. And if United have more of the ball and they have Luke Shaw and they have Lisandro Martinez and they have Kobbie Mainoo, that's when they can do their whole three at the back, one in midfield, six at the front, wide fullback, wide winger, they interchange. When they have the onus and having more of the ball and they have Martinez and Shaw in there, the process of what United should do is creating chances by having more of the ball. Against Manchester City or against Tottenham or against Liverpool away, you're going to probably have times in the game where we saw on Sunday where Liverpool are going to have a lot of the ball, and it's going to be what can United do to disrupt that, or what can they do to win the ball back. What they did well for the first, 30 minutes was they pushed up with Wan-Bissaka, or they pushed up with Dalot. And he's, from my recollection, and I have gone through almost every game this season, and I have had to painfully rewatch it. The only time where he's done this.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah, you're right. I live a great life, my friend. I live a great life.
Oh, wow.
The only time where he has done this, aka where he has pushed both the fullbacks up with the press, is against Villa at home, and it's against Chelsea at home. Now, it doesn't surprise me that he did this again against Liverpool at home, because to me, the only times when he does this is when the crowd is roaring and when he believes that we can grab the onus of the game, which is really strange to me because it's the only thing that has kind of worked in a season where almost nothing else has. So we did this for the first 30 minutes. Obviously, Liverpool still had chances because United were still doing this very, very silly man-marking thing that they've been doing all season. It's very silly. Mainoo, McTominay, Bruno, they man-mark in the middle, but they get dragged out very easily by Liverpool's different players. Hey, presto, space, Liverpool go through, plenty of chances. Now, they did this for the first 30 minutes. The press worked. They scored. Wan-Bissaka was really good at getting forward on the left wing. It was creating loads of overloads. Whenever he was going across, Kobbie Mainoo was joining in. And if you have three or four players in the same section overloading one side, Joe Gomez kept getting pulled to Rashford's side. So then there was a nice gap created between Gomez and Van Dijk. They kept exploring that space. When the Liverpool goal went in, because obviously Liverpool is still one of the best attacks in the league, they're going to have chances and it's still kind of easy to exploit what Man United do. When Liverpool scored the two goals, now you guys can come in on this, there was an astounding 20 or 30 minutes from about minute 55 to minute 72 when the Antony and Maguire changes happened, where Liverpool controlled the game and probably should have killed us off and just didn't. And I was like, the hell are they doing? Why are they like... There was literally spaces and clips that I saw of them having gigantic, like 5-10 yards of space, not turning and just passing it back. And the camera kept panning to Jurgen Klopp, who was furious on the touchline because even he knew. He was like, why are you not killing the game off? There is still... It was a one-goal lead with 10 minutes left. And then the changes changed everything.
Yeah. One thing Ten Hag said after the game was that he said, we defend in the low block really well, and we've got fast players up front. And it seemed to me he was describing the last part of the game, not the first part of the game that you're talking about, where United actually had some control. So,
yes.
So I disagree a little bit with that, I think, because what actually happens, I think, in extra time is United go three at the back with three players that can play football. Like, who is it?
It's Bruno Eriksen and...
And Maguire, is that who it is? I can't remember who it is. They go to a three at the back, and then that gives them an extra man in the press. And that, because they're trying to get a win, it means that the back three is stepping up, and they've got an extra player stepping onto Liverpool that then makes it harder for Liverpool to get out. Because one of the things that I always remember because obviously me and Ed are old and our football education was a bit of Big Ron and then Fergie. And Fergie, he was quite a keen tactician, but he was a keen tactician in that I'm going to play Andy Cole on the right against Fiorentina rather than we're going to press in a 4-2-4. Like, it wasn't technical like that in those days. But hearing him talk about football and simplify football in a particular way was quite easy. And so you're kind of, when United are in, the thing that he would often talk about, and you'd hear Wayne Rooney talk about it a lot when he was on Monday Night Football, was sustaining the attacks and ring-fencing the opposition box. And if I was to pick one thing that I think has gone since Fergie, it's that. It's that ability to put a team under the pump and keep them there, to put a foot on the throat and squeeze. And I think one of the reasons maybe is that they're not committing enough men forward. They haven't got enough balls. They don't trust in what they're doing enough to add that extra man to the attack until they really need a goal, like against Villa at home, or a game where they think the opposition can't handle this, like Chelsea, or when United needed a goal against Liverpool. It's that ability to sustain attacks and to keep the opposition hemmed in. So what we've been seeing from United, I think, in the last decade, more or less, is sometimes good players combine to do something, but I can't remember the last time we saw an opposing team, especially a good team like Liverpool, unable to get out and a proper onslaught from United chasing a goal. And I wondered if that was because they were three at the back and there was just an extra man. And actually, Liverpool didn't have the players to get out of it.
I think in extra time, obviously the Antony goal changed everything. Like even towards, I think, the last 5 minutes, we had the Rashford chance. He might have been offside, but even still, if he scored, the momentum completely swung. And it swung, I think, after the Maguire and the Antony changes. I don't think tactically too much actually changed with them on. But there's a clip that I've seen, not that I've seen, in the rewatch, where Maguire literally mouths to Dallon, he says, go attack. So what? There was only two occasions, really, after 77 minutes after the changes. But Dallon just pushing up a little bit more on Liverpool players, turned the ball over twice. And from that, momentum just sort of swung in the last 10 minutes, and then United could eventually get the Antony goal. I'm glad that you mentioned extra time, because we do need to dissect the fact that he just kept that absolutely balmy. I think it was a 3-2-3-2. It was Maguire, it was Dalot, it was Lindelof, Fernandez as a quarterback, Eriksen just ahead of him, and then three.
Yeah. I think Lindelof's off by now.
Oh, when did Lindelof go off? I can't remember. He was there for a little bit at the back three, wasn't he? And then,
I think Ram came off with Diallo.
Sort of fits my dodgy keepers save penalties thesis, but Liverpool just win penalty shootouts. And I wonder if Ten Hag fancied Liverpool more in the penalty shootout than he fancied United and thought we should try and win it. Or also maybe he's just... And one of my problems with Ten Hag has been, I feel like, commit to what you're doing and people much more inclined to back you than if they see you fudging what you want to do, because then you just come across as wet and a pussy. Whereas if United had sort of had just like miseried out extra time, no one scored, it'd been your classic period of extra time and lost on penalties, then it would have been dreadful. Whereas United tried to win the game. If they hadn't scored and they'd lost on penalties, it would still have been a home loss on penalties for Liverpool in the quarterfinal of the FA Cup. It would have been disgusting, but there would have been at least, okay, like that last 45 minutes, the last 15, the last 20 of the game, and then the last half hour, you'd be thinking, okay, there's something to build on here, because they actually showed some bottle when it got tight. And that is not something that we've seen very much of.
Well, it's what I think about a lot this season. United have lost 16 times, and so many of them are like really, really meek, aren't they? And I kind of feel like there'd be a lot more. Like if United had been going for it, like the first 30 minutes of this game, or had attempted to have some control, or even going for it in a totally chaotic manner for the whole season, I think there'd be more forgiveness of what has happened this season. Like, it's just a mental thing, isn't it? And just being losing meekly, it's like, who's going to forgive that? And I think that's the point Dan's making. But the interesting thing was that the winning goal comes from Liverpool attacking. It's from their corner. Yeah. And they'd thrown so many men up. They'd thrown 9 men up for that one. basically. I mean, it's three around the edge of the box, isn't there? And United score from it. And it's like strange that we got a period of extra time where both teams are going for it.
Yeah.
And United in this just bonkers manner.
Klopp said at the end of the game that he totally respected United going for it. And he's a chaos merchant as well. He loves a bit of controlled chaos. But when the only good thing, I think, since the January break has been that attack, that settled attack of Højlund, Garnacho, Rashford and Fernandes. I think that's like the fourth time I've said it already this pod, but it's the idea of, okay, fine. We will handle everything. By the way, it's remarkable. Again, the amount of things that this team just handled in the box. Like it's, I know people go on about how many shots the opposition have had against United, but at this point, I think it's by design. I think it's by design of Ten Hag saying, okay, yeah, let them shoot in the box if they want. We'll just handle it. I don't personally think that that's how we should be going forward. I don't personally think that relying on how good you are in the box is how you should be playing. You should be playing by saying, okay, our first defensive structure is going to halt another team's attacks. But at this point, he's relying so heavily on the fact that Liverpool had so many box entries, but United just managed to sort of sort that out. In, I think, the second half of extra time, when we talked about, Lindelof going off and Mason Mount coming on. So then it was, I think Bruno was part of the three at the back. But one aspect that was really interesting whilst they sort of leaned into the chaos was the amount of headers they relied on from Harry Maguire to just deal with absolutely everything in terms of in the air. So like in the second half of extra time and in the first half of extra time, whenever Liverpool went long, the amount of headers Maguire did to just get the ball back up the pitch was astounding, really. But you spoke earlier about United and the chaos and the attacks and stuff. It's like I said earlier, whenever he leans into the chaos and whenever he just says, screw it, we'll go punch for punch, you are risking a lot because the defense gives up a lot of shots, but you'll strike back as well. And the plan in extra time was not like there wasn't really a route to goal. It was mainly just keep getting it out to Garnacho. Just keep getting it out to Garnacho. He will run at his man and he'll do either one of two things. He'll get a cross in or he'll cut it back. And then that's how we can go from there. I think Rashford's equaliser was exceptionally important because he was threatening throughout the whole game, Rashford, but I feel as though going forward, for if Ten Hag is going to continue being manager at United, it is important to get Rashford back on side and get his confidence back. There's still an elite player in there for me. I know a lot of fans don't like him, but he was a constant threat against Liverpool, and this attack will continue to be a constant threat on transition, on counters.
Yeah.
I feel similarly about Rashford to how I do about Ten Hag, where I would definitely countenance getting rid of both of them this summer, Rashford if the money was right. But at the same time, the circumstances that have conspired against them make me feel like I'd love to see Rashford in a good team before we get rid. The reason why I think about selling Rashford this summer is because it's like it would likely be a one-time only deal and you end up being stuck with him on massive wages for another 4 years otherwise. But to go back to the thing about Klopp and controlling the chaos, how does Klopp control the chaos? Because it doesn't feel like United do. Mm-hmm. And are we saying that this is just a personnel issue? So as soon as United have a Casemiro replacement and a ball-playing centre-back next to Martinez and a fit Martinez, then that control will come. Or are we saying there's something structural that Klopp does that Ten Hag doesn't do that enables him to make it look chaotic, but really Liverpool, they're controlling it because they're making that happen? And if so, what is it?
That is a really good question. I love that question. I think that's the best thing I've heard all week. But yeah, to answer it,
Jürgen Klopp Daniel's was... Cambridge education coming out there, right?
That was genius. I can't wait to go at that. So... when you think of Klopp and Liverpool, people think of pressing. That hasn't existed for the last 2-3 seasons, by the way. They don't press anymore. You can go look at his interviews. You can go look at how he talks about Liverpool's play style. Liverpool have not been a high pressing side for 2-3 seasons. or not in the same explosive way they were at the start with Salah, Mane, and Firmino. What they do now is control games in attack because they have, I don't know, three or four really elite attackers. And if any one of those three attackers gets tired, he can bring two or maybe even three more off the bench. So they control games with their attack because they will normally score two or three from the attacks that they fashion. Just because they have elite players in defense, they have elite players up front, and they have some elite players in midfield. United's attack isn't quite elite. It's more, it's going to get there. There's two players in the attack, Højlund and Garnacho, that you can build on, but they're not there yet. So it's an attack that's going to get there that is only just about learning how to score goals now. Remember, there was that whole big issue at the start, the first half of the season, where we had less, I think we've only just gotten past a zero goal difference and we were scoring less goals than Luton Town. And I think we've only just about scored more goals than Nottingham Forest now. That's just because now the attack is learning how to score goals together and is learning how to fashion attacks together. The attack is better on transition and on counters. United as a team yet don't know how to control games, and they haven't known how to control games for a long time. They've only known how to control games under Ten Hag last season against mid-table opposition. I thought the point was this season was to build on that and control games against mid-table opposition, but hone that craft and start to do it against the bigger teams. What has actually happened is he's ran into more problems this season while still dealing with the problems of last. So he's finding it harder to break down teams of mid-table opposition, mainly because we have injuries all the time and there's players coming on and off the injury table. And against the big teams, he is relying on the transitions. So in order for United to control games more and attack, there needs to be a Casemiro replacement. You need to work more on the in-possession stuff. You need to work more on the 3-1-6 stuff. And you need to keep building. Again, I'll say it, I don't know, for the fifth, sixth time on this pod, you need to keep building behind this attack that is learning how to score goals more frequently. And if they have a season together, they will score goals week in, week out. And then you can start to learn how to control games.
Have you seen Nice at all this season? I'm still trying to get a sense of what it is they want, the new management team, because in all of Ratcliffe's interviews when United took over, he said the same thing over and over again, which is we'll pick a club's style and we'll choose a manager that fits into that and we'll get the right structure around them. So we've got CEO, football director will get done at some point. I'm not sure what will happen with Murta and the recruitment team. But there's rumours about that. But they're going to pick a club style. And so do we have a sense of whether Ten Hag fits that? While talking about the problems that Ten Hag's going to solve, I kind of think we ought to take one step back and go, is he actually the kind of manager they'd want in the first place? Because if he's not, he's a dead man walking and they're just going to replace him. But is he an Ineos-style coach? Do we know?
There is that aspect.
Your style coach. Does he like tea ures?
Did he like tea leaves, did you say?
Tea ures.
I mean, there is that aspect, but there's also the aspect of Ineos they've never taken over a club this big. That they've changed managers under Nice. I really like Nice's coach this year. He's worked, I think, frequently under De Zerbi, and he's a very, very good coach. It's Farioli. I don't know if I'm saying that right. Farioli?
Yeah, he's kind of young, isn't he, that they brought in? Yeah.
It's Farioli, yeah. He worked under De Zerbi and stuff like that. People who know De Zerbi would love De Zerbi. I don't know what kind of club United are going to be under Ineos, and that's the best way to describe it. I don't know what they're going to be under Ineos because they've never handled a club this big. We don't know who the manager is going to be because we keep hearing things of, well, we've elected a CEO, we've elected a club director now. But even having said that, that doesn't mean that they know what style of football they want. because that's, I think they're deciding now what style of football they want. They're looking at games now. I think Jale Brailsford and Omar Brada, they're going to all these games now to look at what works and what doesn't, whilst factoring in, okay, they have lots of injuries. Maybe we should take the transfer autonomy away from Ten Hag and then see what after that. Having said that,
yeah,
the manager market at the minute is kind of dead. This is the most wildest time to have the four most coveted jobs in the world possibly open: Bayern Munich, Liverpool, Barcelona, and possibly Manchester United. And you look at the managers and you go, I'm kind of scraping the barrel here. I'm kind of scratching my head. So maybe Ineos look at Ten Hag and go, okay, in the last four seasons, the locker room has turned toxic. And in this season, when things have been worse than ever, the dressing room hasn't turned toxic under Ten Hag. So can we keep him? And can we keep him as the Man United manager going forward and build on this team that he's with?
Yeah.
But on top of that, what I want to say is the football that we've seen this season, if I was an Ineos man and if I was an Ineos chairman and if I was Jim Ratcliffe, the football that we've seen this season isn't really a characteristic of Manchester United team that I want to see going forward, because I think that there's loads of mitigating factors and things that you have to contextualize and things that you have to sort of consider, because Ten Hag is week in, week out after each press conference and after each game is saying, well, I can't play the football that I want to because everybody's injured. So then what do you say as a chairman looking at that saying, well, what kind of football are you going to play then? Because we've got five or six games where Martinez, Sean, everyone that he's wanted to be there has been there. Do you look at that and go, okay, those are the six games and that's the football that I want to see under him? Or do you go, well, you could play a different way. You could still keep playing the way that you are, even with the injured players. So in terms of Ineos, and I think we're all kind of waiting to see what happens and all kind of scratching our heads to see. I think the summer will be a huge indication of who they go for and what kind of football team they want to be.
What do we think Ten Hag wants it to look like? Because it's not just, for me, the fact that he doesn't have the players to play the way he played at Ajax. It might well be that it's just a harder league. So to just turn up in Euroleague and play like your Ajax in the Eredivisie is not going to work, because opposition are better, faster, fitter, and with more options off the bench to make things different at all. And I agree with what you said, to go back to your point about Klopp earlier, that there is something about Klopp's Liverpool now that reminds me a little bit of Fergie at the end, where the Glazers were denying him money. So what he does is he doesn't really buy a midfield player between Owen Hargreaves and Nick Powell. And Nick Powell's barely even that. He doesn't buy a midfield player between 2008 and 2013. But what he does do is he has a shitload of centre forwards and wingers, because he knows that when you're stuck in tight games, if you've got loads of different options to bring off the bench that will be quite good, because they weren't that good, like your Parks, your Ashley Youngs, let's be honest, but players will make something a little bit different. And you've had a defender who's been dealing with Rooney and Van Persie or whatever for 70 minutes to then throw on something different. It was how I found United often got results at the end. And it feels a bit like, I agree that that's what Klopp's doing, because he doesn't have the athletes to press like that anymore. But Ten Hag presumably does want to be able to play like that. So I feel like if Rashford stays, and let's assume he does, one of the questions is, can you get Marcus Rashford to press? Because if that's how you want to play, then you need him to do it.
Yeah, just to go briefly back to Klopp, I think another thing that he does well, and that Fergie did well as well, is rely on certain things. So there will be games where Liverpool might concede tons of chances, but he is saying the risk and reward of that is, it's okay. It's okay if they go one-on-one. I've got Alisson. He'll probably save it. Oh, it's okay. Let them through and let them run on my defence, because Van Dijk will probably sort the situation out. In terms of Ten Hag and going on about sort of not playing in the same way at Ajax or what his style is, and because he does have a style, I keep saying it, I really get irritated when people say there is no style. There has been one. Look at what we did last season. It's always been, to me as well, adaptive. Again, the same. when people mention Ajax, yes, they controlled games. They controlled about 80, 90% of the games at Ajax. However, go back and watch what he did in the Champions League. Go back and look at what happened when Ajax were in the semis against Tottenham and they should have been in the Champions League final. That was not controlling games.
Losing a semi-final of the Champions League.
No, that whole Champions League run.
What sort of behavior is that?
No, that whole Champions League run. That whole Champions League run where Ajax beat Real Madrid as well. They smacked up Real Madrid in the Bernabeu. I'll use that then. They did not control that game. That was transition football. For Ten Hag, it's always been adaptive. It's always been adaptive. And that is adapting to the opposition and dialing into different versions of themselves and dialing into different versions of what this Man United team is to win a game. Last year, it was very simple against against your Bournemouths, against your Nottingham Forests, against your West Hams, against your Crystal Palaces. It's, okay, we're going to dictate the ball. We're going to dictate the game. Three at the back, one in midfield, six up top. The six up top is a winger and a fullback joining in, and I'm going to give it to the winger. And whenever I give it to the winger, the fullback is going to go into the half spaces and drag an opposition out. Then that's what you do against your mid-table teams. Against the big teams, Man City, Liverpool, Arsenal, I'm going to utilize the fact that I've got Rashford on transition. I'm going to utilize the fact that I've got Bruno Fernandes, who's Mr. I'm going to send 10, 15 Hollywood passes through, and eventually three or four of them are going to come through. So it's always been adaptive with Ten Hag. That's been his style. I think the point was to work more on controlling games in possession, but he scrapped it this season because everybody's injured. The pragmaticness that he keeps pointing to, it's pragmatic, but it's some of the most ridiculous football I've seen Manchester United play because it was hoofball. It kept being hoofball. There was no... That wasn't even pragmatic. Yeah. It was literally, we're going to go for long balls and then hope that one of my players magically makes something happen. And what randomly did happen was a lot of players did make stuff happen. Dalot scored from 40 yards. Garnacho scored a beautiful 40-yard overhead kick. Bruno Fernandes saved United a couple of times. That's not sustainable. But going forward again, what we will see, I think, if Ten Hag is the coach, we'll keep seeing that adaptive style. Transitions, controlling the ball. It's not either or. It's both depending on the opposition.
So how do you control the ball? Is controlling the ball just you get better players, or when he has better players, the things he'll ask them to do will be different? And to come back quickly also to a point that I'll throw in here as well, you talked about the winger keeping the wide player keeping the width,
yes,
the fullback inverting. To me, with the wide players United had, especially when it's Anthony and Rashford, that was the wrong way around. I would have wanted the fullback on the touchline, and these two inverted wingers, especially Rashford, I'm trying to get him near to the goal. Why do I want Rashford on the touchline and whatever dickhead's playing at left back nearer to the goal?
Victor Lindelof.
When whoever it might be. So how do you get to a point where where you're controlling possession more? Is it just players playing together more and better players? Or is there something structural that needs to be done?
To answer sort of both of the points in terms of controlling and possession, and then also the inverting, because I want to talk about the inverting fullbacks and the winger. You mentioned you wanted, what was it, Rashford on the touchline? You wanted the fullback closest to the goal? Which one was it?
No, we've had Rashford on the touchline often, because what you talked about is the winger stays wide, and then the fullbacks
invert,
kind of come in the half space. Whereas to me, that especially when you've got inverted wingers, that especially when one of them is really someone who might have been a centre forward if he had a better first touch. You want them, Rashford's in the team mainly to score goals, not to nip past the winger on the outside and put a cross in. So I'd be looking at the Rashford in the half space and the fullback on the touchline.
Okay, well, it's both. It's supposed to be both. It's never meant to be the winger is just going to stay wide and the fullback is only going to invert. It's supposed to be both. It's supposed to be interchangeable. Sometimes the fullback can go wide and the winger can go into the half space and pull the defender out. At other times, it's going to be the opposite way around, because that keeps players guessing and it keeps players pulling around in different spaces. It's rotations. You can't keep occupying the same spaces and the same players can't keep doing the same things, because then the opposition is going to figure it out. The inverted winger / inverted fullback needs to be interchangeable, because it has to be either or. there always has to be one player in the half space pulling a player down the line, because then that creates space for whoever's on the outside. But you can interchange. You can interchange because it keeps oppositions guessing.
So one of the things I think has been better about United recently, and why they look more potent, is the balance, though. Because now that you've got Garnacho, a proper attacking player who's playing on his natural side, and especially when we had Shaw on the left, then all of a sudden you're able to make the pitch as wide as possible if
that's
you want
the whole
to,
point, yes.
Because you've got two players that are happy going down the outside. And I never like the way it worked. The reason it worked for Liverpool when they had two inverted wingers was, number one, just how good they were, plus the quantity of goals that they scored, but also because they had fullbacks who were good enough to do the job of wingers. And United don't have that. So having one player on the natural side means that you have that threat down the side. And it doesn't appear to have compromised Garnacho's ability to score and create goals, the fact that he's playing on the outside, not getting a bit nearer towards goal. And so I think that it feels like now we've sort of hit a level where maybe the manager's actually realised that.
Yeah.
You need if both your wide players want to come inside, then you need different fullbacks. You need fullbacks that properly can attack.
I feel like this is a conversation where we're definitely going to come to more as we wrap up the season. But it's a good one. It's an interesting one, isn't it? Because Dalo, in particular, has grown into the season, and he's arguably one of our better players this year, and had a very good game against Liverpool, both defensively and in an attacking sense. And I guess if we want to play like this, the way that we think Ten Hag might want to play, then he's going to be quite important. And Shaw and or another left-back will also be quite important too.
The question with Dalo isn't is he the right type of player. It's is he a good enough player for me anyway. Like, I think that he can play on both sides. He's fast, he's strong, he can go on the outside. He's good. He's getting better defensively. He's quite good in the air. He can cross a bit, he can pass, but he can invert. The question is, can he do any of these things well enough?
Let's wrap it there. I think this is a good conversation, and we'll come back to this one next week.